During this last week or two of December 1977, there's been the usual toss of Christmas spirits, or holiday spirits. And it seems appropriate to go back to the time when Dawson Creek was called, what was it, Mr. Newby?
It was noted for its Christmas spirits, or its spirits, homemade, manufactured right in the old town.
And that was the basis of the word, or the name, Moonshine City, or Moonshine...
Moonshine Center.
Moonshine Center.
At one time it was called Moonshine Center. Quite a few times it was called Moonshine Center. They said some of the best moonshine in the country was made in that South Dawson Valley.
Well, you must have had some notable men then in the business around here. Can you remember any... We won't use any names for obvious reasons, but let's see now. Got any tales about notable manufacturers?
Yes, I think so. There used to be one just a half a mile south and west of the old town. He's still used to set up at the spring on the place that Chris Smith, I think he still has the place, where they used to haul the scenic water from.
Oh, up on the hill, south of town.
Yes, on Bear Mountain.
Oh, that was beautiful water.
And we can mention his name. He's long gone, because he was renowned for his bricks, Irish. And he made real fine whiskey. His name was Bert. So the name was given to the moonshine, it's Burke's Irish.
And that would bring a premium price, I suppose.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, if you were really hungover and needed a little of the hair of the dog that bit you, he would never hold you up. He would always buy you a drink.
Oh, he was an ethical operator then.
Good living old chap, just as far as I knew. He's one of the nicest guys I can remember.
I understand that there were quite a number of operators in the old town out here in the Kanauta subdivision now. I recall one very old-timer telling me that Tom Ray had a store there, a so-called store, that he carried on business in a two-story shack. And that he was raided many, many times and was never caught. And his method of operating was to keep a few cans of snus, a few pounds of sugar on the shelf. Never was seen to have any potatoes, but in the corner of his store was a bag, a depository, high pile of bags in the corner under which he kept his the stock that most men came for. And that... the police would raid him, but they never thought of looking under there. Tom Ray, being the person who gave his name to Tom's Lake and Ray Lake. Now, that's the only one that I know about, but I understand that there was one establishment just up the creek from the old town center.
Yes. Tom Ray had the little store there when we first came through town. In 1921, but whether he had moonshine, I don't know, because I was just a kid, and then we went west to Progress, and that's where we were living, in Progress. But I know he was doing some trading. He did. He was a trader from, as you said, from Tom's Lake and Ray Lake.
He was a trapper too. I believe his trap lines ran out that way.
That could be. And he did some trading with the Indians, so more than likely he had a little firewater.
Well, according to the old-timer, he did. He had a lot of it.
He has.
And that he never got caught.
I don't know whether he ever got caught or not. But I know two or three of the other ones that did get caught, all right.
Well, I gather there were a couple of youngsters in town here that helped to give away one of the operators. Isn't that the Goodrich kids?
Yes. They were... staying in the old town, the teacher moved them up to supplement his class at school in order to keep the school operating. A teacher by the name of McDermott that lived at South Dawson. There was a faction that seemed to be wanted the school closed. and he was canny Scotsman, and they weren't going to close him up. There was no way they could close him up. So he brought these kids up and paid their board in the old town. And somehow or other, they got the worm, the cough of worm out of the still, and the kids had a string tied on and were dragging it around in the street. They thought it was quite an invention. It would jump and buck when it run up against a rock or a rut. It would, imagine the coil was maybe 18 inches long, or deep, about a 6-8 inch coil, all good copper pipe. And the kids had a great time dragging that around. When they were inquired where they got it, they said it was Cy Smith's. They got it from Cy Smith's. So, Cy must have had a moonshine operation up there, up the creek there somewhere. I don't know just where.
Well, how could he carry it on without being spotted? I thought there always had to be a fire and there would be smoke because they had to distill the mash.
Well, in the wintertime, I imagine they did. They used the stove because everybody had the fire going. But in the summertime, big smoke at a cabin or a shack would indicate there was something wrong. In hot weather, who wants a big fire going? So they used to do their cooking outside with the coal up stove. They get coal on stove for evenings, and they could boil their mash on the coal up stove right outside, and no smoke, no smoke at all. All they had to have was a good supply of coal, fresh cold water, and there was no telltale smoke. The police come looking around, or they couldn't find it, they couldn't spot it from the smoke. Otherwise, they would have been able to just go right to it in the smoke. But with the coal oil stove, as I said, they couldn't trace it.
Well, speaking of the police coming round, now, was it illegal to make the stuff, or just illegal to sell it?
I think it was both illegal to make it, where it was distilled, as well as illegal to sell it. I think you could always make wine up to a certain gallonage without running afoul of the law. But if you distilled it, that was a different proposition altogether, a different deal altogether. You were not supposed to, you had to have a license to operate a distillery. And then you had to have a license. The government weren't getting any tax off that whiskey that was made,
yes.
The white mule that was made out in the bush. The government didn't collect any tax on that, like they do off the 90% of the price in the vendors is tax of some kind or other.
Oh, yes. That's why the police were interested.
That's right. They were very interested.
Not to speak of the their being able to confiscate the product. And according to some of the things that I've heard and read, they were supposed to destroy it. Destroy this after the person had been fined or whatever. And there was one way of the police destroying it, which was quite frequently used, I gather.
Yes. That's what I understood, too. The evidence just naturally disappeared. And it, in many cases, it wasn't poured down the drain, either.
Well, you didn't have sinks.
No.
There was no sink to put it down. Yes, that would be a handicap.
That's right.
Wasn't there a policeman? Seems to me when I first came here, I heard a story of a policeman that had a nice little business.
That could be. I couldn't comment on that. I don't remember.
Of course, that was up in 1930, 34. There were a lot of people around then, and stories may have multiplied.
Yes.
I think I heard of...
I know there was one that was sure liked to drink, and he wasn't too fussy whether it was moonshine or government whiskey, as long as it was drinking liquor,
mm-hmm.
He was quite happy with it.
Yes, I gather that.
Yeah.
I think that later on, you were telling me that there was a gentleman of another uniform that was making moonshine. With a clerical collar?
No.
Wasn't it a preacher that was reputed to be making some moonshine or whatever? In the house that you had recently vacated? When you went back, you found that it was... Didn't you tell me about that one time?
I don't know whether it was a creature. I have no idea who it was. But after we had, after I started driving trucks, hauling bridge timbers and what have you, after we left the homestead, the wife and I went up one Sunday just to have a look around, and the old cabin was just lined up with mash barrels and a stack of sugar bottles all over the place, and 100, 200 pounds of cornmeal. I don't know what that was for, unless they were making a little corn liquor too. And the little shack was right alongside the dugout. And they must have had quite an operation there. There must have been at least, I imagine, six oak barrels on a rack in the house. And one of the neighbors up there told me they couldn't figure out how come the police had been driving up there straight south on the road from the old South Dawson Hall right down into the flat and watching up on my place, my homestead, with glasses from the road a half a mile east of that in the bush. And they were trying to catch whoever this was that was making the moonshine up there. But I never did find out who it was. And to the best of my knowledge, they never caught the guy. They knew it was set up there, but they didn't catch him at it.
I think it's quite certain that it wasn't any of the regular clergymen around, but there were people that were known as lay preachers and that sort of thing. And if there were any truth in the tale at all, I imagine that that was the basis of the tale, and then might have been somebody that was just telling a story for the sake of telling a story. What were you going to say?
I don't remember any preacher's name being mentioned in it. I did hear after another name, but it wasn't a preacher.
And what else did you call it? Now, we've said moonshine. I heard it called moose milk when I first came here and had to inquire from somebody who laughed at me heartily about not knowing what it was. What else was it called?
White mule, white lightning. It had many different names, I believe.
Well, wasn't there one that white hen or white chicken or?
Yes, there was one that was made. It was made the other side of the cut knife. They called it chicken whiskey.
Oh yes, yes.
They said one drink of that and you laid.
Oh.
It was real powerful stuff, and they didn't figure they were doing too good a job distilling it. It was real potent, and that's all come they called it chicken whiskey.
Well, in other words, you went down not so much from the alcohol as the impurities that were in the rum.
That's what the contention was at the time, yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yes, I heard about that. Were there any other? Oh, I'm sure there were other names. I heard about one wedding dance when we first came here. In fact, the whole town was very quiet. The day after this wedding dance, we were not very well known at the time, we didn't go, but I understand that nearly everybody came, and a wash boiler was set out, and whatever anybody brought was simply dumped in there. It was stirred up, and the mixture was rather potent. I think somebody mentioned that people brought along some lemon extract. Wasn't that a rather common?
The Indians used to drink it quite a little bit, and I imagine some of the white men too, both vanilla and lemon extract.
And that would be one of your most important imports then, that the freighters would carry in. That and raisins, I gather. Wasn't there a story about the importation of raisins?
Yeah, the policemen were looking at one place there at South Dawson, and they had a real stack of raisins in the cases. They'd come from Square River. He'd haul it from Square River. And they asked him what he was going to do with all the raisins. Oh, he said, I like it, lots of pie and cake. And Sergeant Duncan, there was nothing he could do about it. It was just that the guy who voted against his, he knew he wasn't going to eat that much pie or cake, but he couldn't contest it. So that's the way it went. It was lots of pie and cake.
Yes, I think we had quite a colony of people here who had come from a part of, or hailed from a part of Europe in which the making of wine was a regular thing, and that they made a very good quality of product.
Real good quality. Most all the whiskey was made around South Dawson was all good quality.
How much would you get? How much would you have to pay for a bottle of Bootleg?
They used to put it up in pint beer bottles, mostly, at 75 cents or a dollar.
Well, in that day's currency, 75 cents or a dollar would be worth how much now? $4 or $5?
That's right. Yep.
Well, what did the real stuff cost?
There was so many times back in them days that you had no change, and you couldn't get any change. So if you had a dollar bill, you spent it. If you went to the store, even the small fry went to the store and wanted to buy a candy, he had to buy a dollar's worth. A lot of times because they couldn't give him any change. They didn't have any change.
So it was a flexible price.
That's right.
Well, how much would it cost to get a legal bottle, or could you get a legal bottle here?
At that time you couldn't. No, there was no government vendor here at that time. The government vendor came in later. And George Hart took it over in Bruce Cooper, the government liquor store.
He was the first liquor vendor then?
Yes. He operated the first liquor store, George Hart, from Hart Hotel.
Well, it was still the only place, the only source, as far as I remember, at the time of the war in the 1940s.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what kept the road open to Pooscoopy, was the fact that liquor coupons were given out, they were rationed, and everybody who wanted to cash in his coupon had to go to Pooscoopy.
You were right. They had to line up Pooscoopy to get into the liquor vendor, especially at this time of year. And when the American Army was here, you could sell it as fast as you could get it, and the price was a dollar an ounce. $26 for a 26 ounce,
and that in those days would be worth over $50 now easily, because value of money is very much more than it was at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Liquor was rationed. I know I had the food rationing office, but another lady had the liquor vending, or the liquor coupons, and mm-hmm. people used to storm into my office and demand their liquor ration books back. And when I inquired what had become of them, well, they'd been employed by so-and-so, and he'd taken their liquor ration book away from them, and he was using it, according to them, allegedly, for barter with the American Army, that he could get scarce articles of food and machinery and what have you for the black market. And then when they ceased being employed, some of the employers didn't give the books back. And so one way and the other, I think that I probably could have compiled about a 95% correct list of the people in town that were carrying on black marketing. Almost all of the men, all of it was done on the basis of liquor ration coupons.
Well, I know for a fact there was oodles of people that never bought a bottle in their life till the ration came on, and they were in the black market. Everybody had a ration card for a bottle of whiskey.
Well, I think Mrs. Rattray, wasn't it, that was the ration officer for the liquor coupons. I think she did as much work in her office on liquor alone as I did on all of the food coupons.
I wouldn't be surprised.
She was a very busy lady.
Some of those people who went in there had a whole sheaf of tickets, ration tickets.
Well, some of the big employers would have a handful,
just a stack
of them going.
Yep.
And washing machines that came into the American PXs, and ball bearings, and pieces of machinery, and nuts and bolts and what have you, were all exchanged. We had a barter system here. They were all exchanged, most of them on the basis of liquor ration.
A lot of things were exchanged on the liquor ration.
There wasn't enough food allowed to us that we could do very much black marketing with the food coupons. But as you say, the people that didn't drink had liquor ration books, and they could profit from those if they didn't drink their own product.
Well, we didn't have any trouble with the with the food rationing. Well, I was hauling on the highway then, and there was no restriction, no rations in the Yukon.
Oh, there was no ration in the camps either.
But we could go into Nelson Bay, or we could go into the stores in Whitehorse or Tasman Lake, and we could buy sugar, syrup, jam, butter, tea, coffee. No ration cards at all.
But you no liquor.
No, no liquor.
So
you could buy liquor in Whitehorse, sure, but you have to have a ration card for liquor in Whitehorse too, because most everybody, most all the truckers have ration cards for both BC and Yukon.
Yukon.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, but as I said, we could always buy. You could stop at the Hudson Bay Company in Lower Post and pick up a bag of sugar, and there was no restriction on rice. Up there, even rice was a priority here.
And what, wasn't wheat used here too?
Wheat was used a lot to make moonshine.
Uh-huh.
Right. I think wheat was the main ingredient. Wheat and sugar and some raisins.
Well, that makes a superior product.
So on.
Well, it looks as if the business of moonshining, both making it, drinking it, bartering it, was one of the main businesses of this area. In fact, one man has told me that making moonshine and selling it was his only cash crop for the first 2 years he was in the country. It was as simple as that.
I think it was in 1915, 1916, when from the stories I've heard from the old timers, when they were building the railroad grid from Spirit River, they built it through to the BC border.
Yes.
And an awful lot of that whiskey went to those workers on the railroad grid. They even have ties laid, of course, they have the high bridges in there, Rat Creek and Cashewan. They were big bridges there, high bridges.
Well, could you take cattle and wheat and so on over to Spirit River? Was it legal or possible to bring the other product back and make the trip pay both ways? Did you do much importing from Alberta?
No, I don't think so. There was some groceries and things brought back because it was a lot cheaper. You saved the freight on them because it was all horse-drawn freight at that time. And if you could go to Grand Prairie, well, when we first came, we used to have to go to Grand Prairie for our groceries to get stocked up on practically a year's supply of groceries at a time out of Grand Prairie. We went with the wagon in the summertime.
And a lot of that would be raisins and sugar.
I imagine in some cases, with us, it was strictly groceries, because there was us, the uncle and his wife, and his partner and his wife, and mother and us four kids. So it took quite a lot of flour and sugar and syrup. And
all you could carry.
We never made any moonshine. We were out west then. Maybe they made moonshine out there somewhere, I don't know. But I never seen it used to any extent out there when I was young.
Well, are there any other good stories about this topic that I haven't heard about up to the present?
There was one about this. An interesting topic that an old Frenchman told me. He was visiting with Burke across the creek there from the old town, and they'd been on quite a bender for 3 or 4 days, and then they took a notion, they, about time they slowed down and had something to eat. So they went over to the butcher shop and got some meat, and they had a good big stew on the stove when the policeman drove up. And they had run out of coal oil, so they didn't have a coal oil lamp, but they just had candles sitting in saucers on the table. And they had a bottle of moonshine on the table. And the old Frenchman, when they heard the team drive up, he picked the candle up out of the saucer and stuck it in the neck of the moonshine bottle right on the table. And the wick melted the wax, naturally, and it run down over the neck of the bottle. The policeman came in, first thing he did was search through the porch where they kept the wood. You hear him going through the porch, and then he banged the door and came in, searched all over the house, and never found a thing. They didn't have a drop of moonshine. And that bottle was 2/3 full on the table the whole time he was searching all over the place with the candle burning. The old guy got quite a kick out of that after he left. I remember the old Frenchman, old Stanley, told me about it.
Speaking of cooling the moonshine, I've heard a story to the effect that the water was also used to cool legitimate beer in the summertime. Wasn't there a story about Billy Burroughs that turned out almost to be a tragedy?
Well, I don't think it was a mere tragedy, but it was sure amusing at the time. We'd been working hard, it was at the stampede time in the old town. I was riding pickup with Billy Burroughs, and Butt Lynam was judging, and a friend of ours, Charlie Hoover. We went to the creek. Billy had cashed some beer in the creek. We used to get the beer from the government vendor in quart bottles, Cascade beer. And Billy had put it in the creek to keep it cool. Well, the creek was also used for cooling the beer in the summertime. And in order to get the beer out of the creek, Billy had to lean way over the bank and put his arm right into his shoulder to get the beer from the barn. And Butt Lynam had his arm hooked around a poplar tree, and I had a hold of Bud's hand, Charlie Hoover had a hold of my hand, and he had a hold of Billy's hand. And Billy was laying right out over the water with his feet on the bank, and he was fishing around in the bottom and bringing this beer up out of the cold water. And Charlie was counting them as he brought them up. Then he counted one, two, and three, and then he looked back and he counted Bud and myself and himself. And he said, three, and he let go of Burroughs. And Burroughs went full length into the creek. If he'd walked in, he wouldn't have got wet much more than up to his waist. But when Charlie let go of him, he was laying right flat off of the water, and down he went. But when he came up, he had more beer. He had his own bottle. But when he came up from the bottom, he had two. So everything was copacetic. Everything was hunky-dory. Only thing, Billy was soaking wet, but it was a real hot day, so it never bothered him. He was dried off in a very short time.
And I've heard another story that almost turned out to be a tragedy, or could have turned out to be a tragedy. At any rate, the man who was peddling the moonshine had intimations of immortality. Wasn't that one of our respected citizens from south of town that met the policeman?
Mm-hmm. There was a trapper's reunion. It was in the spring. The trappers used to have a reunion. And after this old occurred, it was always a big poker game. And usually drinking session and poker. This time it was being held up Finn's Corner at Jim Brown's cabin. That was the only cabin on that quarter then. He's the guy that homesteaded it, was old Jim Brown. And this big poker session was going on, and they run out of whiskey. So they sent word up to this guy at South Dawson that they needed some more whiskey. This was long in the evening, so he got 2 gallon jugs. He used to ride, he rode a white horse this time, and he rode it straight down that road line there to Jim Brown's Corner. But somehow or other, the police had got wind of this, and the police was waiting just on the edge of the bush there by Jim Brown's. And when the policeman stepped out in the moonlight, he didn't know who was bringing the moonshine or whether he knew he was going to be caught or knew he was caught when he stepped out. But he had his, according to the gentleman, he had his revolver pulled out. And he said when he looked into it, it looked pretty near as big around as a water barrel, just looking down the barrel of that gun. And he was fined $300 in costs that time.
Oh, there were serious moments in the story of our Moonshine Center. And on that note, I think that we'll end our interview. Mr. Ray Newby has been telling us about the old days, and thank you very much.
You're very welcome.